there will be many meaningful advances on a range of issues.
The G20 summit is about to convene in Japan amid many viewpoints. It's Friday, June 28th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia has concerns with China and North Korea. Watching press freedoms and free speech in Afghanistan. Democrats debate. New cancer treatments. Separating water and salt. It's all on today's VOA Asia. World leaders are arriving in the Japanese city of Osaka for this year's G20 summit, which begins later today. The G20 is aimed at promoting financial stability and sustainable growth, but as Henry Ridgewell reports, many of its members have sharply differing views on issues like trade and climate change.
As the world's top 20 economies prepare to gather in Osaka, all eyes are on its two biggest members, the United States and China. U.S. tariff hikes on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods has led to a spiraling trade war threatening the global economy. But in recent days, bilateral talks have resumed and the language has softened, raising hopes of a breakthrough, says analyst John Curtin, who is at the summit in Osaka.
Everyone's awaiting the bilateral meeting on the margins of the summit between President Trump and President Xi. But behind that drama, there will be many meaningful advances on a range of issues. And there are overlapping coalitions of countries that are pushing them forward in a spirit of compromise.
Summit host Shinzo Abe made his hopes clear this week.
I expect that the United States and China will resolve their trade friction in a constructive manner through dialogue.
The Osaka meeting could see significant progress, says Curtin.
This trade war is taking place at a time when the global economy is in pretty good shape. And there's major agreement about to arrive at Osaka on trade liberalization and new rules for the new high frontier of trade in the 21st century, digital trade.
Yet other shadows hang over the summit. The threat of conflict between the United States and Iran has driven up oil prices. In Hong Kong, pro-democracy protests have received vocal support from the West, though China insists it will not allow the demonstrations onto the G20 agenda. The biggest dispute could come over climate change.
And here there's a natural tendency for the host, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, to put that on the back burner, so the spirit of compromise, agreement, and harmony will prevail. But we have no time to lose at the control of a climate crisis.
France says it will insist the summit communique backs strong action on climate change.
I have one red line. If we don't go far enough with our climate ambitions, that means we're holding the meeting for nothing.
Analysts say the G20 meeting will be seen as a test of multilateralism at a time of huge challenges for the international community. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. President Trump seeks to reassure allies at G20. Court rules against challenge to Indonesia election result. Australian student thought missing in North Korea. Trump says North Korea talks are doing great. Pyongyang disagrees. U.S. official says U.S. and China plan to meet on civil space in autumn. Expanded coverage of all of these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook daily at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australians are increasingly suspicious about China and worry about the potential for foreign interference in their democracy. That's according to a new survey from a major foreign policy think tank. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Lowy Institute poll suggests many Australians believe their economy is too dependent on China and there's too much investment from Beijing. Attitudes towards the Chinese appear to have hardened in the past 12 months because of Beijing's territorial claims in the South China Sea, concern over Chinese involvement in Australia's telecommunications network, and allegations of cyber attacks and interference in domestic politics. According to the survey, Australians' trust in China to be a responsible global power is at its lowest since the annual poll began 15 years ago. Natasha Kassam is a research fellow at the Sydney-based Lowy Institute.
Only 32% of Australians now trust China to act responsibly in the world, and that's 20 points down from 2018, which is really significant. And across the Lowy Institute poll, we can see on a number of different indicators growing concern about Australia's relationship with China.
Even as concerns about China appear to mount, the poll hasn't shown a surge in support for the United States, Australia's long-term military ally. Only a quarter of respondents say they had confidence in US President Donald Trump. Australia is a wealthy middle power with close ties to Asia, particularly Japan and Singapore. It's a former British colony and retains a strong relationship with Britain. Its most valuable security alliance is with the United States, while it's relied on China, its biggest trading partner, for its recent prosperity. Juggling and negotiating the complexities of these different and diverse diplomatic ties are perennial challenges for Canberra. The poll is conducted for the Lowy Institute by a social research organisation. It quizzed more than 2,000 Australians in mid to late March.
Phil Mercer is also following efforts by Australian government officials who are urgently seeking to confirm whether one of its citizens has been detained in North Korea.
The family of Alex Sigley, an Australian student living in Pyongyang, say they haven't heard from him for 48 hours, which is unusual. Active on social media, he doesn't appear to have logged into his Twitter or Facebook accounts for several days. It's not known why Sigley, an Asian scholar and fluent Korean speaker, might have been detained. He's thought to be the only Australian living in North Korea. His family can't confirm if he's been arrested, but Australian government officials say it's a very serious set of circumstances. Originally from Perth in Western Australia, the 29-year-old has been living in the North Korean capital for the past year while studying Korean literature at Kim Il-sung University. He's also run a business running tours for Western tourists visiting the totalitarian and impoverished North Korean state. Professor John McKay is a Korea expert from Deakin University.
The North Koreans are incredibly sensitive to what we would regard as the smallest provocation. For example, a few years ago there was a huge diplomatic incident between South Korea and North Korea when one of the South Korean workers in the special economic zone just over the border in North Korea was seen wrapping some garbage in a North Korean newspaper, and the newspaper had a picture of the North Korean leader on it. The North Koreans reacted very, very sharply to that, what they saw as a provocation.
Several foreigners have previously been detained in North Korea, sometimes for illegal entry or for what the regime considers to be hostile criminal acts against the state. In 2016, an American student, Otto Warmbier, was jailed in North Korea for stealing a propaganda sign during a tour. He spent 17 months behind bars and later died days after he was returned to the United States in a coma. Australia's official travel advice to North Korea is that there's a high level of risk and potential travellers should reconsider their need to visit the country. Foreign visitors have been subject to arbitrary arrest and long-term detention, it adds. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, India's top court ruled Thursday against a challenge to the country's election results that alleged massive and systematic fraud, paving the way for Joko Widodo's second term as president. The court's ruling is final. The legal challenge's failure was widely expected. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Made it through another week together. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. The Afghanistan government sees peace talks with the Taliban as an initial step to the end of the ongoing war in the country. But journalists and rights activists in Afghanistan are expressing grave concerns about the impact the outcome will have on freedom of the press and free speech. VOA's Karlula Rasuli reports from Kabul in the story narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Since the Taliban was ousted from power in 2001, many Afghans have grown used to having access to radio and television stations, something banned under the Taliban government. Today, there are hundreds of radio stations and multiple television channels in the capital city of Kabul alone, from news channels to talk shows to entertainment programs like the talent show called The Afghan Star. But as media industry flourishes, Afghanistan's war with the Taliban continues. Ongoing talks to end the fighting have journalists and the media industry worried.
We are certainly concerned about the peace talks. If agreements are made without journalists and women's points of view, and if somehow they are negatively affecting media's freedom and women's rights, then under no circumstance is that acceptable.
Journalists already face grave danger doing their work in Afghanistan. According to Reporters Without Borders, 16 journalists were killed on duty in 2018 alone. Activists say journalists may face even more danger if the Taliban regains power.
The Taliban haven't hinted yet whether they will accept the freedom of speech and media or not. They said they accept freedom of speech, but only in accordance to Islamic laws. But for us who have been working Afghanistan, our views don't align. They have red lines that they don't want broken, but our red line is our constitution, and the laws are clear in it.
But Afghan officials say freedom of speech and media are non-negotiable in talks with the Taliban.
It is possible that the Taliban might propose limitations on freedom of media. This isn't acceptable to us. Media will be free. Freedom of speech within the boundaries of our constitution will exist. There will be no negotiations in this matter.
But the Taliban struck out on Monday, warning media groups to cease government-funded advertisements asking Afghans to report suspicious Taliban activities. The group warned that media groups and journalists who do not seize the ad campaign will be considered military targets. For Khairullah Rasuli in Kabul, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, U.S. presidential candidates speak up. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News from VOA Asia. North Korean and U.S. officials are said to be holding behind-the-scenes talks to arrange a third summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, 4 months after a second meeting between the leaders in Vietnam collapsed without any agreement. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, 10 Democratic presidential contenders who want to defeat U.S. President Donald Trump next year face their first major test of the 2020 campaign cycle on Wednesday, a nationally televised debate held in Miami, Florida. The candidates often targeted Trump and occasionally each other in the first night of the debates. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone tells us what happened.
On stage in Miami, 10 Democrats vying for the right to challenge President Trump next year in a nationally televised debate hosted by NBC. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's been rising in the polls of late, focused on the economic divide in the United States.
I am in this fight because I believe that we can make our government, we can make our economy, we can make our country work, not just for those at the top. We can make it work for everyone, and I promise you this. I will fight for you as hard as I fight for my own family.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio crafted his appeal to working class voters.
Because putting working people first, it matters. We need to be that party again.
But Ohio Representative Tim Ryan said national Democrats were out of touch.
We are not connecting to the working class people in the very states that I represent, in Ohio, in the industrial Midwest. We've lost all connection.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker argued he was the best candidate to defeat President Trump next year.
This is a referendum on him and getting rid of him, but it's also a referendum on us, who we are and who we must be to each other.
Immigration was a flashpoint in the debate. Former Cabinet Secretary Julian Castro lashed out at Trump administration policies in the wake of the drowning deaths of a father and daughter from El Salvador and the haunting photos that have drawn international attention.
Watching that image of Oscar and his daughter Valeria is heartbreaking. It should also piss us all off.
Former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke joined in the condemnation.
We would not turn back Valeria and her father, Oscar. We would accept them into this country and follow our own asylum laws. We would not build walls. We would not put kids in cages.
The candidates were also asked about recent tensions with Iran. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar said she feared that President Trump was moving the country closer to war.
And this president is literally every single day 10 minutes away from going to war, one tweet away from going to war, and I don't think we should conduct foreign policy in our bathrobe at 5 in the morning.
There was also a debate over whether the U.S. should stay in Afghanistan. Ohio Representative Tim Ryan said yes.
And the lesson that I've learned over the years is that you have to stay engaged in these situations.
But Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard said it was time for the United States to leave.
As a soldier, I will tell you that answer is unacceptable. We have to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. We are in a place in Afghanistan where we have lost so many lives.
Also taking part in the Wednesday debate were former Maryland Representative John Delaney and Washington Governor Jay Inslee. On Thursday, 10 more Democratic contenders will get their first chance to debate. They include Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, California Senator Kamala Harris, and the current frontrunner, former Vice President Joe Biden. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And those 10 Democratic White House hopefuls will have their chance to debate later today. This news from VOA Asia. A senior U.S. official says U.S. and Chinese officials will meet in the United States before year's end for bilateral talks about civil space amid growing concerns about China's behavior in the rapidly expanding commercial space market. Launch your news awareness with daily visits to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, cancer treatments are becoming more precise and less invasive. This means treating some cancers will take less time and produce better results, as we hear in this report from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are standard treatments to combat cancer. But chemo and radiation kill healthy cells as well as malignant ones, and the side effects are legendary. Cancer treatment is now moving towards precision medicine, therapies that target just the cancer and not other tissue. For example, focused radiation for women with early-stage breast cancer can be used after surgery that removes just the malignant tumor. Plus, it takes less time than full breast radiation.
The short 5-day treatment is just as good as the
the whole breast irradiation for 4 to 6 weeks.
Other treatments use the body's own immune system.
It's not pretty clear that that immune system sees cancer cells, sees them as abnormal, and if we unleash the power of the immune system, can attack and destroy the cancer cells in a very, very helpful way.
Still another treatment involves testing the cancer cells to determine their genetic makeup and then using medicine designed to kill only those cells.
We're talking about targeting cells at the very core of what made them a cancer to begin with. And that's what precision medicine is really about.
Each patient's cancer is unique, just like their DNA, and that's what helps determine what medicine will work best. Healthy cells are left alone, and patients' side effects can be remedied.
Very few of them have had a side effect that I've even needed to do anything about. And the couple that I've had, if I just drop the dose one level, not only is the side effect gone, but the treatment still remains effective. Right now, where I think the biggest impact is being felt is for those patients whose cancer is not cured, that comes back over and over again, or actually spreads to other parts of the body.
The results are very promising.
I get this patient in who's been told they're only going to be around for 3 months. She was so sick, she was in a wheelchair and on oxygen. And in my lifetime, that person would be gone in a year. And here it is 3 years later, and she's hiking with her kids.
These therapies are still new, but cancer specialists say targeted therapy is the future of cancer treatment. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
It may be that the two major challenges to humanity's future both involve water. When it comes to climate change, melting glaciers and sea levels rise. It's a problem of too much. And then when it comes to safe drinking water, it's a problem of not enough. VOA's Kevin Enix reports some new desalination research may help solve the drinking water challenge.
A new report from the UN suggests the world has not met its goal of ensuring safe drinking water to the world's population by 2030. Not only that, but the report suggests that by 2050, half the world's population may not have access to clean drinking water. And while there's more than enough in the oceans, the trouble is removing the salt from it to make it drinkable. But a Rice University project called the Nanotechnology-Enabled Water Treatment Program, or NEWT, as a way to easily and cheaply turn salt water into drinking water.
So what we're doing here at NEWT is try to provide water anywhere in the world where water is needed and treat any source water to the quality that's needed for the specific application.
Desalination generally works one of two ways, by forcing water through small membranes that sift out the salt, or by distilling the water by using heat to evaporate and condense the water, leaving the salt and minerals behind. The problem is that both methods use so much energy that they're dirty and expensive.
The conventional way of making distillate, of using membranes to distill water, involves flowing hot, dirty water on one side of the membrane and cold, clean water on the other, and that temperature difference drives the process. And the problem with that is that you have to heat a lot of water, a huge volume of water. All the water you want to purify has to be heated, and that has an enormous energy cost.
But this new method uses a nanotechnology spray that turns the filtering membranes into heating elements, and it's powered by the sun.
We're using solar photothermal processes, which can be very localized, embed them in the membrane and shine light directly on the membrane. That way we don't have to heat all the water at all. We only heat the water that's directly in contact with the membrane. It vaporizes and it condenses on the other side and we make clean water.
The result is perfectly clean, drinkable water at a fraction of the energy cost. 1 square meter of membrane can produce 6 liters of drinking water every hour. The U.S. Department of Energy has invested $1.7 million into the new technology to allow the team to do more research. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Of course, find us streaming daily on VOA Asia Facebook and at voanews.com. That's our website. You'll also find us on the radio. Many great radio stations across Asia carry our program, like at Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's listened to our program today. We invite you back again next week. We'd like to say thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.
Welcome to Learning English.